Prajapatihi. Lord Brahma.
Lord Brahma.
Swam. His own. Duhitaram. Daughter. Drishva. Having seen. Hat Rupa. By her charms. Darshitaha. Bewildered. Rohit Bhutam.
To her in the form of a deer.
Saha. He.
Anvadavat.
Ran. Rikshurupi.
In the form of a stag.
Hata.
Bereft of.
Trapaha.
Shame.
So translation. At the sight of his own daughter, Brahma was bewildered by her charms and shamelessly ran up to her in the form of a stag when she took the form of a hind. So you can repeat. At the sight of his own daughter,
Brahma was bewildered
by her charms
and shamelessly ran up to her in the form of a stag
when she took the form of a hind. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Brahma's being captivated by the charms of his daughter and Lord Shiva's being captivated by the Mohini form of the Lord are specific instances which instruct us that even great demigods like Brahma and Lord Shiva, what to speak of the ordinary conditioned soul are captivated by the beauty of woman. Therefore, everyone is advised that one should not freely mix even with one's daughter or with his mother or with his sister because the senses are so strong that when one becomes infatuated, the senses do not consider the relationship of daughter, mother, or sister. It is best, therefore, to practice controlling the senses by performing bhakti yoga, engaging in the service of Madan Mohan. Lord Krishna's name is Madan Mohan, for he can subdue the god Cupid, or lust. Only by engaging in the service of Madan Mohan can one curb the dictates of Madana, Cupid. Otherwise, attempts to control the senses will fail. Okay. Prajapati swam duhitakram drishtva tadrupadharshitaha ruhidbhutam sonvadavad rikshurupihata trapaha. So omagana timidandasha gananjana shalakaya chakshurun vinditam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So of course this is a common theme that is there in many places in Bhagavad Gita about controlling the senses. And actually, that's the first principle of yoga is indriya, to control the senses. And actually, we find many instances of great spiritualists who weren't able to control the senses because they weren't meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Visham Mrita Muni. And there's many others who had several instances of problems. And of course, we find many instances of great spiritualists who are advanced and meditating on the form of the Lord, such as Haridas Thakur, who didn't have problems. So you juxtapose the two. You know, Vishwamitra Muni, when he heard Menaka ring her ankle bells, that's all he was describing, all he heard was a ding-a-ling-a-ling, like Artie. Immediately opened his eyes and went, wow! Jai, Haribo! And then, and as a result, this Shakuntala was born. Anyway, that's another story. And then also when Ramba appeared later on, he got very angry and he burnt her, you know, with his glance. So he was able to deal with lust through anger at that point. So anyway, whereas Haridas Thakur, on the other hand, he had this very attractive lady a prostitute, and then Maya Devi herself, and Haridas Thakur just said, Hare Krishna. Please chant Hare Krishna and give initiation to both of them. So, I mean, you juxtapose them. So, anyway, Balavan Indri Grama Vidvan Iva Hikarshate. But for those of us who are not pure devotees, we have to be careful not to contemplate sense objects. And sense objects means, of course, for the men, the women, and for also for the men, objects of the tongue. And there's other types of lust too.
So women don't have to worry about contemplating.
Yes, they do. Oh, okay. Women shouldn't contemplate the objects of the senses either. Women shouldn't contemplate, that's what I just said, women shouldn't contemplate men, like buy muscle magazines or something like that. I guess they have muscle magazines, anyway. Like Playgirl instead of Playboy. So anyway, so neither men, when I say men, I mean mankind or people kind, to make it more politically correct language. Neither should contemplate the objects of the senses, because Jayato Vishyat Pusam Sango Stefu Vijayate. You can become attached to anything. Anything. Now, we can even become attached to an ugly person in a sensual way. You can become attached to abominable food, like French fried maggots. Different parts of the world, people think it's, you know, a delicacy. Because they've contemplated, whatever you contemplate enough times, like, I mean, I'll give you an example. Actually, it's interesting. I don't know if everyone's going to like this example. But, like what we were brought up in childhood, like the types of food and everything we were brought up in childhood, were very attached. Like, we were very attached to, like, too salty food or something like that. And it's attachment. If someone says it's not good for our health, I don't want to aggravate anyone, but I do anyway. And someone said, oh, I can't change because we're attached. You understand? But the interesting thing is that you can change that attachment by the process of Krishna consciousness. I mean, yes, obviously, if you're not Krishna conscious, then karnam gunasangasya sarasajadma jonishu, the modes of nature control you. And the modes are just struggling for supremacy. One mode is sometimes prominent over the other two modes, etc. So then probably there's no hope of changing your attachments. Just like they say in AA, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. You understand? In other words, your desire or need or whatever you call it, you know, addiction, the alcohol is always there, so you can't even take one drop the rest of your life. I'm not saying that you should take drops. But the point is that you don't overcome that addiction. So we're not only addicted to alcohol, of course I'm not, but I don't know about the rest of you, but we're not only addicted to things like alcohol and illicit sex and things like that, but we're addicted to, like I was just reading the other day, how people get addicted to sugar. Oh, there's another politically incorrect thing to say. There's sugar addictions, you know, and chocolate addictions. You can even look it up on the internet, chocolate addiction. Anyway, so people get addicted to so many things. Or just like we had one, there was one lady here who was a very good devotee, which went on Sankirtan all the time, but when it came time for the winter season, you know, the skiing season, you know, snow skiing, that she couldn't keep her mind off of skis, you know, she just like, in the night she would go to sleep and dream about shushing. Shushing doesn't mean, you know, shh. That's when you go shh, shh. Anyway, because I used to ski, I know what I'm talking about. It's when you have the parallel skis and you go shh, 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 and you have fun. And I gave up skiing when I fell off a cliff one time. Anyway, that's another story. But the point is that she was so addicted that, you know, we say, well, please chant Hare Krishna. She said, I can't. And she ran out of the temple and ran to the ski slopes and shh. And she gave up Krishna consciousness because she was addicted to skiing. I didn't say yet. She could have chanted while she was going down the ski slopes. Kept a clicker in one of her hands. Hare Krishna, like that, and chanted around. But anyway, but people develop these amazing attachments, and they don't think that it's possible to give it up. It is. You can change. Of course, as you get older, it's harder to teach an old dog new tricks, whether it's a male or a female dog, okay? But it's harder. It's much harder, that's true. But, you know, we have to be ready to change our attachments. Now we change our attachments by, as Prabhupada says here in the purport, by being attached or attracted to the form of Krishna. And Prabhupada said, that's the cure for lust. Like many devotees, they have other ideas about how to cure themselves from lust, like at night, putting ice cubes in their bathtub, you know, and just, you understand? I was reading one book, and it was put out by a devotee who was actually a little of my age. He said, it was a book called The Joys of No Sex. And he was giving all these material ways to cure lust. You know, rub your body with ice cubes. I don't know if it said that, but I mean, I'm just being a little facetious here. Can you imagine that?
No.
Rub your body with ice cubes. Before you go to sleep, you know, put your stand on your head for about 3 hours, you know, so the blood goes to your head instead of any other parts of your body. Anyway, so I know that those things aren't there. I'm just being facetious and exaggerating. So that you'll see that the material ways of controlling the senses don't actually work, because the seed of desire is always there. And bhakti fries that seed, you know, Krishna consciousness fries the seed of desire. And ultimately you're attracted to Krishna, you're having such a good time, you're seeing the beauty of Krishna, the beauty of the spiritual world, the beauty of the holy names, and then everything else pales in comparison. You know, even if the most attractive man or a beautiful woman comes up, you'll just yawn. They'll say hi, and you'll go, oh. Oh, what's new? That's Krishna consciousness. You become nirapeksha. Nirapeksha means disinterested, not negative. You know, that some people think, oh, to conquer the attraction like that, that the person comes up and you say, yuck! That doesn't conquer attraction. That's attraction and repulsion. That's the opposite side of attraction. You like a beautiful man, a beautiful woman or a handsome man comes up and you go, yuck, Maya! You're an agent of Maya. It doesn't work like that. Because then that's still, you meditate. When you're thinking negatively about someone, you're very attached to that person or thing. It's like when Kamsa was thinking negatively about Krishna. He was very attached. So that's one way to meditate on a negative, in a negative way, right? Anyway, there's that example, of course. Let me just tell the story real quickly of the sannyasi. Two sannyasis, they were crossing the river. One sannyasi helped the lady cross the river, carried her across on his back. And the other sannyasi was just angry at the first sannyasi for the next 10 miles. How could you do such a thing? And finally he said to the first sannyasi, how did you do such a thing? And the first sannyasi said, I only carried her across the river. You carried her 10 miles. So the point is not to be negative or to be positive about sense enjoyment, but to be neutral and attracted to Krishna. That's all. Anyway, but before we come to the point of, you know, absolute pure devotional service where we don't have any trouble with the senses become our friends, we have to be extremely cautious right now, as Prabhupada points out. Therefore, this leads us to the next part of the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, which talks about avoiding obstacles in devotional service. For one who is a pure devotee, there are no obstacles in devotional service, because he's always meditating on Krishna. But for the rest of us, and that's about 60% of us in this temple room, or 80% or 100%, then we have to talk about obstacles. So this is the next part. So there are actually 10 types of forbidden activities or obstacles in devotional service, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One is bad association. A lot of these things are mentioned in the Upadesha Amrita. You know, associating with materialistic people. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about, actually we can, let's, as we go over the 10, instead of giving the whole list right now, I'm going to do the explanation, so I'm going to be skipping back and forth. So he says materialistic people, there's 6 types of materialistic people. People who don't have faith in the Lord and don't have moral standards, people with morals, that's the second type is people with morals with no faith in God. 3 people with morals and faith in God, but who think that God is subservient to morality. In other words, God better behave himself. He has no business dancing in the middle of the night with the gopis. And next one is pretenders. That means people who act like they're devotees, not actually devotees. Next one is, fifth one is impersonalist. And the sixth one is polytheist. Polytheist means many gods. So we're going to be going rather quickly through this now because I want to finish this by the end of the month. So these are the 6 types of bad association or materialistic people. Let's see if we have to analyze that. I think that's enough. That's enough right now. So that's the first type of forbidden activities associated with materialists. Second type is to establish unfavorable relationships. There are 4 types of unhealthy relationships that are described. Unhealthy relationships with disciples. What does that mean? That when one becomes subservient to the disciples in the sense that one wants to please the disciples because they're getting money or something like that from the disciples. Find someone who's very rich and says to them, would you like to be my disciple? And something like that. That's an unhealthy relationship. One collects many disciples or initiates unqualified people. That's the first type of unhealthy relationship. Second type is with his friends, bringing them down rather than up in Krishna consciousness. And then with servants, with friends. Well, associates, I guess, would mean business associates in this particular context. Okay, so that's the unfavorable relationships. The third one is attempting huge projects. And this is actually very interesting. This is called, in the Upadeshamrita, prayasa. That means over-endeavor. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, devotees should give up enthusiasm for big endeavors in different situations. If there are no funds for a project, the work should not be attempted. If a person's life is nearly over, he should not attempt a big project. Well, that's pretty common sense, If the work requires a lot of help and there's no way of getting assistance, then the work should not be attempted. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, such things create an obstacle in the practice of bhakti. If huge projects for temples, halls, or ashrams are difficult to execute, then they should not be considered. In other words, it should come naturally. What does it mean, difficult? It means you have to give up your Krishna consciousness, your sadhana, your cultivation, your internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness in order to achieve something. I mean, just like we have this new temple that we're planning, but we should do this in a sane way, not that we should be just like giving up our chanting and giving up our other aspects of the sadhana just because we want to build a temple. If it happens, and we hope it'll happen and we think it'll happen, but it's up to Krishna. But it happens if it happens with us being Krishna conscious. That's the main thing. And without taking on big mortgages or loans, so that devotees are in anxiety for the next 30 years, even after, we leave, this is our legacy, we leave everybody with a big mortgage. So that's over-endeavoring. Next one is spending time studying different works and various philosophies. It's sometimes described as studying many shastras or many scriptures. So basically, one, we should only study things that help us in bhakti, that lead to the conclusion of bhakti. And even with those books that lead to the conclusion of bhakti, we should not try to study a lot study many, many books with the idea of just being able to argue with people and defeat them. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, some people, and we know them, take pleasure in arguing with any statement they hear, whether good or bad. This is forbidden for devotees. In other words, just word jugglery using the shastras for that. So Prabhupada said it's better to be expert in one, two, or three books than to be to have some knowledge of many books. So basically, the devotee, what that means for the devotees in the Krishna conscious movement, we specialize on Srila Prabhupada's books, and we learn Srila Prabhupada's books thoroughly before we go on to reading any other books. Although, I mean, one time I was giving a seminar Narottama Das Thakur's prayers. And so, you know, I started the seminar. I asked the people who were attending the seminar basic questions about Bhagavad Gita, like, you know, what is the main topic of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita? You know, basically, are you the body or are you not the body? And most of the people didn't know that. I mean, obviously they knew they weren't the body, but I didn't... But they didn't actually know much of the Bhagavad Gita. And I said, I'm not going to give this seminar. I just walked out. Because I said, you got to study Bhagavad Gita first. So sometimes we find devotees trying to teach something in a very elevated fashion when they have not understood the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and or the people they are teaching have not understood the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You know, back to the basics, as they say. Okay, the next type of forbidden activity, the impediment in devotional service, is called meanness. And sometimes that's translated as miserliness. Miserliness, of course, we all understand what a miser is. It's like that Uncle Scrooge at Christmas time, you know, the Christmas carol. It's just like hoarding money and And also not being willing to help the other devotees or help even poor people. Like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur criticized his disciples when the beggars would come up to them and they wouldn't give them anything. You know, the people were actually starving in India. He said that you think that you're better because you're devotees, but you should actually be helping these people to develop compassion. Okay? So that's another type of forbidden activity. Another type of forbidden activity is disrespect to the demigods. We respect the demigods. We don't consider them equal to or independent of Krishna. But we respect them. We don't worship them. We don't perform puja to them. We may give them remnants of Krishna, but we don't consider them to be God. Anyway, so don't disrespect them. Another one is giving trouble to other living entities. Let's see. Of course, that means even an ant. A devotee should never give trouble even to an ant. The next one. Yeah, that's pretty easy to understand. A devotee should become merciful to all other living entities, especially if one is a householder, one is supposed to feed every living entity that comes, even if he himself or she herself has not eaten at that particular time. That's a household life. And you're even supposed to consider the bugs just like your children. Pretty good. Are you ready? Ready for that? Okay. And then the next type of forbidden activity is seva or nama aparada. And I think everybody knows what that is. Of course, seva aparada. Nama aparada we've described many, many times. There's 10 types of nama aparadas, the 10 offenses on chanting. And the seva aparadas are, let's see if I can find that right here, to consider the residents of the holy place to be ordinary people, to perform sinful activities when one goes to a holy place. Let's see. That's why it's described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one should not spend more than usually 2 weeks in a holy place. Prabhupada actually, as far as Vrindavan was concerned, didn't really want devotees just to move into Vrindavan. He wanted them to visit Vrindavan and then get purified and go, unless they were rendering service in Vrindavan. Okay. Okay, that's... And the last type of forbidden activity is tolerating criticism of the Lord and his devotee. So we should avoid these 10 types of forbidden activities if we want to advance in Krishna consciousness. And that does that with this chapter. That's the finishing this chapter. Now we'll go on, because we're going quickly through this book, to the fourth rainfall of nectar, which is called Raganuga Bhakti. So after you've perfected Vaidhi Bhakti means the rules and regulations, then you come to the point, another aspect of sadhana, which is called Raganuga, where you're following the practice of Krishna consciousness spontaneously. Or the word raga actually means attraction. You're doing it because of attraction, not because it's a rule, but because you're attracted. And it's very important to differentiate between these two aspects of bhakti yoga. So rules are called vidhi, and a natural taste or attraction is called raga. Let's see what else here. The reason I'm not using the outline is I want to go real fast through this. The purpose of vidhi or vaidhi is to achieve raga. And the pure raga is called ragatmaka bhakti. And only pure souls who participate in the Lord's pastimes are qualified for ragatmaka bhakti. Now, part of Raganuga Bhakti is that you find a particular pure soul who is part of Krishna's pastimes, who is called the Ragatmaka Bhakta, and you follow in their footsteps. In other words, you meditate on serving that Ragatmaka Bhakta. And the qualification to come to the stage of Raganuga is that one should become greedy to attain that emotional state. Raganuga Bhakta. Raganuga Bhakti has two types. One is called Kama Rupa and Sambandha Rupa. Kama signifies a thirst to enjoy a particular object. And for us, that means we have a thirst for the objects of the senses. So Kama for us indicates a thirst for material enjoyment. However, when the Lord becomes the object of that thirst, this attraction is called Prema. So that's Kama Rupa Bhakti. The prema of the Braja gopis who were eternally perfected souls having no other object other than Krishna is called kama, because there is no difference between prema and kama in the spiritual world. Thus, their ragatmaka bhakti is designated as kama rupa. And those who follow in the footsteps of the kama rupa bhaktas is also called Kamarupa. Sambandha Rupa, that's the other type of Raganuga Bhakti, is based on four types of interrelationships between the master and servant, between the father and son. Sambandha actually means relationship, basically. Between the friend and friend, and between the husband and wife. In Sambandha Bhakti of the Raganuga Bhakta, following the path, a particular mood of Sambandha Rupa Bhakti is found in accordance with the particular Ragatmaka devotee that they are following. Now, I'll explain that, what that means. That whoever you are following when you're on the platform of Raganuga, that indicates your relationship with Krishna. Let's say if you're following Mother Yashoda, then your sambandha, your connection, is also in that that prema, the parental relationship. Sambandha bhaktas who develop a greed for emotions similar to those of a particular inhabitant of Braja should internally fix themselves as servants of that person and with complete dedication to him or her internally perform service in a suitable, mentally conceived spiritual body. Don't do that right now. That's a very advanced stage, but it's something that we should be hankering for. There's a difference. When you're ready, you should do it, but you should be hankering for that stage. That's very, very important. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakura prays, when, kabhi habi bolo se dinamar, when will that day be mine? So this is our prayer. This is one of the prayers that we can have while we're chanting the holy names. When will tears come from my eyes like torrents of rain? Nayanam galu dashu daraya varanam gargada riya gira pulaka vichitam kada tava nama grahane bhavishyati. When will that day be mine, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, isn't it? When tears will come from my eyes like torrents of rain. Gadgada, that means that's anumano poetic. When will my voice be choked up? Has anyone ever experienced that? Sometimes. But not in Krishna consciousness. Like, in the mundane world, if you meet your beloved, gaga. Isn't it? I've seen it. I'm speechless. That's gagada. Anyway, when will tears come from my eyes like torrents of rain? When will my voice be choked up? These are bhavas. In kind of ecstasy. When will the hairs stand up? Pulaka. When will the hairs stand on end in my body? When will that day be mine? So we should be continually hankering for that perfectional stage. When will it come? Krishna, I want it. Please give it to me. We should be begging. Anyway, we should be crying for it. When you chant japa, you should be crying for that perfectional stage. Krishna, I want it. Not like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Sometimes I'm brave enough to open my eyes during japa and I see, devotees don't need valerian and other herbs to take rest. They just go. They're very relaxed. Anyway, I said, why did I open my eyes? I'm just getting frustrated. And then I just go like, sometimes I go like that, sometimes I go, Hare Krishna! Anyway. So this is for people who are on that stage. They should practice externally all the angas of Vaidhi Bhakti that are agreeable to their particular cultivation as long as they have not reached the beginning stage of prema. So Raghunuga Bhakti is not quite prema at that point. It's still practice, but it's done out of attachment. Okay? Anyway, that's the fourth rainfall, Raghunuga Bhakti. And tomorrow we'll get on to Bhava Bhakti, which is the fifth rainfall of this book. But you should hanker for Raghunuga Bhakti as you're chanting. That is one of the goals. It ultimately is prema, but it's the next step. So we should be hankering to take the next step, but only when we're fixed.